This is the Brit Lit Podcast with dramatic readings and dialogues, making British literature fun.
Welcome to the Brit Lit Podcast. We are, as promised, bringing you a little bit of a different format today, talking about Dylan Thomas. This is Mr. Craik, and with me today...
Hi, I'm Jacob Osborne.
We are excited because the rest of the class is gone. They're all seniors, so they flew the coop. They're in New Orleans or something on their senior trip.
I think it's Florida now, Mr. Craik. But
okay.
Yeah.
Possibly that. Jacob is my lone junior in British literature. So we've had the week to discuss a little bit and talk about Dylan Thomas. So we're going to do a little bit of a different format. I'm excited about doing a little bit of a talk. So strap in your seatbelts, and we've got some stuff to talk about. We're going to start with giving you some background on Dylan Thomas. Who is Dylan Thomas, Jacob? You did the research.
Well, Mr. Craig, Dylan Thomas, he's a poet from England. He was born in 1914.
Shall we do our 32-second?
I think we should.
Because those are so profoundly popular on our BritLit podcast, we decided we would do a 32-second Dylan Thomas. So, Jacob, scripted. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, we'll let it rip then. The life of Dylan Thomas thrown down into 32 seconds. Do you want to do the On Your Marks, Get Set, Go?
Sure.
Do it.
I'm waiting for the On Your Mark, Get Set, Go.
You say it.
On your mark, get set, go. Dylan Marlies Thomas was born in Swansea, Wales. His father taught him English instead of the native tongue of Welsh. He dropped out of school at the age of 16 and became a reporter. He wrote more than half of his poems at his family house of CWM Donkin Drive. Most of his poems relate to the relationships he had with people. At the age of 20, he was one of the most exciting young poets. He used vivid descriptions that contrasted trends of the 20th century. He married Caitlin McNamara in 1937 and had two sons and a daughter. His marriage was littered with various affairs. He collapsed on November 4th of 1953 in the White Horse Tavern after drinking 18 straight whiskeys. He died at the age of 39. Now lots of people read his poems.
Wow, nicely done, Jacob. You carry on the legacy of the 32-second production nicely.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
That was impressive. So if you may need to pause, rewind it, and listen to it a couple of times if you're listening to that. That's been a favorite pastime of our 32-second fans, listening to it over and over again. What are some of the highlights of Dylan Thomas's life there that you nuggeted for us?
He had a wife, and he had three kids. He had two sons and a daughter, but while on tours, I guess he had a bunch of affairs with other women. But, I mean, I guess he loved his wife, and she really loved him because when she died, like 10 years after he did, she was buried next to him. So she must have really loved him, and I guess he must have been a pretty good husband, even though he had... affairs. She may not even known about his affairs.
Well, she was known as well for not exactly being faithful. So, I mean, it was a rocky marriage along the way, which,
yeah.
You know, as we look into his poetry, you'll see some of those themes come out. I mean, alcoholism,
oh, yeah.
certainly a play in there. His relationship with his father, we didn't really touch on in the 32-second, but tell me about that.
Yeah, he had a pretty good relationship with his father. He moved around and lived with him for quite a while. He actually wrote one poem called Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, which is a poem he wrote actually for his father about as he was growing old and nearing his death, how his father should fight strong and hold out till the finish.
And we'll talk about that. That's kind of going to be our feature poem when we talk about Dylan Thomas here. We're going to dissect Do Not Go Gentle a little bit more. But his father, I mean, it was kind of a long, drawn-out death period that we're going to look at, and Dylan Thomas, it kind of gravely, you know, impacted him. A lot of his poems kind of revolve around that. Do you hear that, Jacob?
Mr. Craig, is that a knocking?
Yeah, I think it is. Is that
knocking on heaven's door? Maybe.
Coincidence? Bob Dylan. Dylan Thomas? Bob Thomas? Rob Matchbox 20?
Where are you going with this?
I don't know. What is that? Bob Dylan, there are rumors circling. Have you heard this rumor, Jacob?
Well, what's the rumor?
Well, of course you've heard the rumor. The rumor is that Bob Dylan took his name from Dylan Thomas.
Really?
Bob Dylan was a fan of the poet Dylan Thomas, changed his name. What was his original name?
I'm not sure. Let me see if
not
I
Not sure.
Find
did
that.
You not do your homework, Jacob?
I did do my homework, but I don't have that one pulled up at the moment.
Were we just playing a gratuitous Bob Dylan clip there?
We were. It sounded like a knocking on heaven's door.
That's exactly what it was. Bob Dylan, great. Of course, we're referring to Bob Dylan, the folk singer, songwriter, father of Jacob Dylan of the Wallflowers. Yes. But Bob Dylan, one of the greats, All Along the Watchtower, Blowing in the Wind, Knocking on Heaven's Door, Hurricane, a lot of good stuff. And a singer, folk singer, songwriter, who was very, very much a poet, very much in his own right, and heavily influenced by Dylan Thomas.
Really? I had heard that he changed his name to Bob Dylan after his uncle Dylan.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I had heard.
That's what you had heard. Some people say that it's a conspiracy, but however, wait, hold on, check it. What was his original name?
His original name was actually Robert Allen Zimmerman.
Okay, Robert Allen Zimmerman changes his name to Bob Dylan, and you're saying after his uncle?
Yeah, even though his uncle's name was spelled different, it was spelled.
Right. See, there's my
D-I-L-L-O-N.
So, if he really was indeed after his uncle, wouldn't it have been D-I-L-L-O-N? I don't know. I think that there's a little bit more to it there. I think Bob Dylan, and there's actually a rumor Bob Dylan did some guest music spot. Did you find that? Did you read about that? Bob Dylan did like a guest recording artist spot on someone's album, and the credit in the text was a reference to a Dylan Thomas.
Really? I hadn't heard
poem.
That.
So anyways, interesting conspiracy theories there, but take it or leave it, the overwhelming point is Dylan Thomas was popular, was well known, influenced even folk singer songwriters, and a lot of Dylan Thomas, as we'll talk a little bit more about the themes and his forms, Bob Dylan kind of took on even that, you know, Knocking on Heaven's Door, talking about this idea of death and this idea of, you know, fading in. And speaking of, we're going to dive into our poem. What's our featured Dylan Thomas poem we're going to talk about
today here? Today we're going to talk about Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. This was a poem written by Dylan Thomas about his father when he was getting old and dying.
Well, let's go ahead. Give us a dramatic reading here. Jacob Osborne performing right. Dylan Thomas's Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying, how bright. Their frail deeds might have danced in the green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way, do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now, with your fierce tears I pray, do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Excellent. Very nicely done. First thing that jumps out at us about this poem is, of course, those kind of repeating lines. Do not go gentle into that good night, and rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Kind of reminds me of this French form of poetry I saw one time.
Nice transition. Speaking of, yeah, first thing, obviously, is the form. Well, what is that form?
I believe it is called a villanelle.
Villanelle, excellent, the French form. And what are the key characteristics of a villanelle?
Well, it repeats, obviously, as you can see, those first and third lines, do not go gentle into that good night, and rage, rage against the dying of the light. Also, it's about 19 lines long.
About, exactly, right?
About exactly.
The specific form...
Yes.
19 lines. There really are only two rhymes. The whole poem of a VNL by characteristic is that there are only two, and they're repeated throughout. So it's ABA.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. ABA, 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 ABAA. So the whole thing is kind of a redundant form. And we actually have a uniquely written original composition of a VNL about VNLs. This is courtesy of our own, the voice of the BritLit podcast at the, from the beginning, the introduction, Carolyn Kirby. We were sitting in here kind of racking our brains. How can we communicate what a V&L is? And so we thought, why don't we write a V&L about V&L?
Much more interesting.
Absolutely.
Just defining it. You know?
So the brilliant Carolyn Kirby drafted together after some brainstorming a wonderful poem, and we'll put that in the show notes so you can really experience the beauty of it. But here is a V&L about V&Ls by Carolyn Kirby, and Jacob is going to read it for her because she is off doing summer break stuff. All right, Jacob Osborne, V&L.
A V&L is a euphonious thing. It's a French form of a poem that in the 1800s came to be. Say it, chant it, write it, or just let it out and sing. It's comprised of 19 lines and one fluid string. Two rhymes repeat with pure, simple glee. A villanelle is a euphonious thing. It can be about love, life, or death's sting. The meter, it's loose. The form is free. Say it, chant it, write it, or just let it out and sing. To strict number syllables, it does not cling. From alternating rhyme, it will not flee. A villanelle is a euphonious thing. When the two lines repeat, unity they bring. They maintain the theme of the poem without a plea. Say it, chant it, write it, or just let it out and sing. And you, dear listener, pick up your pen and fling all your fluttering ideas on paper in jubilee. A villanelle is a euphonious thing. Say it, chant it, write it out, or just let it sing.
Excellent. And there you have it. You can go back, take a look in the liner notes, talk to us about that repeating stanza, the A-B. And this form was not just an arbitrary form. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but this poem is really kind of fitting because those repeated lines that the V&L kind of requires gives that droning feel, that do not go gentle into that good night, rage. It's kind of this rolling thing that kind of pushes us into the concept. So let's take a look at that, the poem, kind of stanza by stanza here. The theme is introduced in that opening stanza, but you'll notice, what do we notice about these? Again, give us a recap. Who are we talking to? Who's our audience here?
This is actually from Dylan Thomas to his father, who at this point in time is a little bit older in life and is nearing death. And so he's telling his father how he should not just, you know, go soft and just kind of let death take over him, that he should fight against it till his last dying
breath. In that first stanza, old age should burn and rave at close of day.
Yeah.
You know, when you come down to the end of your life, you shouldn't just give up and go. You should constantly be pushing. Now, in these next second through fourth stanzas, he talks about four different men, using that kind of that form. He talks about wise men, good men, wild men, grave men. And why does he, what do these four men, these pictures of these four men have to tell us about old age and about death here?
I think Dylan Thomas is really just pointing out that really no matter who you are or what you did in life, that death comes no matter what. I mean, you can try all you want, but death is still going to come.
Excellent. Yeah, so like in our stanza, that second stanza, a wise man, you know, even though he tries to, he can't keep death away, it all comes to him. Yeah, right. No matter what you've done, death is that common. And, you know, even if you haven't accomplished your goals in life, that's kind of the wise men at the end. No dark is right because their words had forked no lightning, even though that they weren't able to make a challenge. What about that third stanza? What's he saying there? Good men.
Those good men that, you know, they're talking about their good deeds and how they might have shown, but still, death comes.
Right.
So,
you know. I love that picture, their deeds dancing in a green bay. You kind of get this picture of dropping a stone out in the water and the ripples of the bay.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a good man. You throw a rock out there and you got your good deeds and the ripples are going, but
that rock is still sinking.
Yeah, and nothing's really, you know, are you really making a huge impact? So it's an interesting thought there. And then wild men, what's going on here? What's a wild man do or have
to
offer?
They've lived their wild lives and then they realize that they've basically wasted their lives and death is here, and now they can't avoid it. They gotta
regret.
Yeah, maybe a little
sad.
Bit of regret there.
And then grave men near death who see the blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage against the dying of the night. It's kind of sad. All, you know, you can see flashes of happiness, but it collapses. And
yeah.
And then that final stanza, he's specifically addressing his father.
His father, yeah.
And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your tears, fears. You're dying. Do something. Say something. You know, it's kind of, I get that picture when you're a kid and you're busted by your parents and they just give you the silent treatment.
Oh yeah, they give you that look.
Right.
I hate that look.
And then it's just silence and you're like, you know, punish me, do something, spank me, I don't know, send me to my room, say something.
Yeah,
but when they give you that,
stop giving me that look.
That disappointed, that's the worst. And it feels like that's kind of what Dylan Thomas is saying, you know, do something, you're going down here, this is at the end, curse, bless, do something, you know, cry something, I want you to feel, I want you to go out with the bang, rather, you know, don't just waste away in nothingness. It's kind of this call for challenge, for action. It's kind of a sad tone here.
Yeah,
but
it really is.
Let's take a look at some of Dylan Thomas's other poems. Is this characteristic, uncharacteristic? This is kind of a, you know, talking about death. You mentioned that his father and this, you know, alcoholism and coming to an end of who a man is typical. What are some of those other poems that we've seen, that we've taken a look at?
That were of death?
Yeah, I mean, is that a common theme?
Yeah, he's got several poems that are about death. Like one was talking about how, I think it's specifically called The Clown in the Moon.
Yeah, Clown on Moon, right.
Yeah, and so it talks about death.
When there's the eulogy.
Eulogy, true. That's also another really good one.
And what is it? We talk about comparing those. What are the similarities of those poems? I mean, is it purely theme or?
Majority of the theme, yeah, is about death and people dying. About how people he knows or has known have died, and that it was really kind of not a whole lot you can do about that. It's real structured.
Mm-hmm. Structure is a good, that's a good line. Talk about that. What are the different structures that Dylan Thomas uses in his, I said Bob Dylan, I'm looking at this CD here. This is good music. We may have to play some more of that before we leave.
Yeah.
We can only play 13 seconds though, according to fair use laws. So
true.
It's a little side law note there for you, but talk about Dylan Thomas's, his
structure.
What are the structure of his poems? What's the significance of that?
Well, he uses very similar structure in his poems that relate to death. Like when he talks about death as in like his Do Not Go Gentle Into the Night or Eulogy or Clown on the Moon, they're all very structured. They have like a rhyme scheme, or like Do Not Go Gentle Into the Night is a VNL. He uses very similar structure in those. Whereas when he talks about his relationship with other people or his childhood or things he remembers that aren't really related to death, he has a real flowing free verse that's, there's no real rhyme scheme to it, and it's not real structured, I guess.
Such as, like, Fern Hill,
such as Fern Hill.
Right, Fern Hill, one of his great poems that are very typical of that era, that were free verse, you know, these lush rolling greens and images of that sort, but very free, not bound to form.
Yeah,
whereas,
so there's no definite structure saying that he's got to rhyme it.
Interesting. Right, and a lot of this, these themes that Dylan Thomas talks about, this idea of a loss of innocence and of death and dying and struggling and fighting, these metaphors he's using are pretty typical of the era. Let's talk, speaking of that, let's talk about our transition.
The modernism era.
Well, let's talk about the historical context. What's going on in Europe at this time in British literature, in the scheme of things?
At this time, actually, World War I has just ended and World War II is just about to get started. So,
and perhaps even has at points in Dylan Thomas's life, he experienced the Germans were bombing,
right,
bombing
England,
England at that point.
Bombing cities,
right? And again, like the this is, you know, we're coming out of war. This is a very desolate time. All of these, the British colonies,
they're all demanding their independence,
right?
They're like breaking off.
Previous to this, it's like Britain is this great empire, and all of a sudden now everybody's wanting to break away. We've got war, we're being bombed, and that comes out in Dylan Thomas's work,
yeah,
right? I mean, a lot of his themes are about this
death and destruction,
loss of innocence, maybe loss of childhood.
Yeah,
it kind of, it really speaks true. And speaking of that, I mean, a lot of literature, and again, you know, here I am, a history teacher and an English teacher, and I see these patterns, and we can see this as we study literature, British literature. We see these, you can look at a writing and you can see what, how it applies to context and how those themes come out. And so speaking of that, let's look at this modern era. What kinds of characteristics are happening in literature during this time? I'll put a link to our this Trackstar, some of our resources that we went through, so you can kind of look along with us. And one of our sources gives us a nice rundown of British literature through time and through periods. Studyguide.org is kind of was a good source for us, and they kind of highlight some of the content, the characteristics of literature during the modern, postmodern period. Why don't you, Jacob, give us a rundown? What are some of the themes and the styles and that are happening during this era?
Well, Mr. Craik, it's about usually their main character is a lonely individual who's trying to find peace and comfort, where he's in a world where there's almost no values or traditions or anything. It's like almost like his past and almost his present is taken away from him, and all he has to look forward to is the future. He's trying to go find out what he's doing in life.
So there's not really anything absolute.
No, it's very fluid and flowing.
People are kind of situational ethics.
It
and
mixes like fantasy with nonfiction, and you can't really tell what's reality or what's going on.
Okay, so these are a lot of kind of the themes that are happening, this idea of a loss of a hero, and there isn't really a value. How does that come out in the style? What are a lot of the common styles of modern and postmodern poets?
It's very free verse, and you see a lot of like epiphanies. Like they realize, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be in life.
Okay.
And they.
So, and we see that in Dylan Thomas's work. A lot of like Fernhill, is that free verse. This
how he, his father's death and the free verse where. When he talks about, you know, his life and his relationships that he has with people.
Right. Their approach is very, you know, seize it while you can, live life to the fullest, which even in his poems about death, it is about that. It is screaming to that. So that's kind of our page that we're on in literature. This modern era is talking about that. And we alluded to it in our talkings about Dylan Thomas and his background early on, that one of the things that made him so great is that while he was very much a modern poet, at the same time he was doing things that not all of his peers were doing, such as
romantic,
right? A lot of, where do we see that romance coming through in his poems?
Well, Mr. Craig, we can see this romance coming through mainly in his structure, how he's got the structure of what was happening before the modernism period. So he's using that romantic time style writing.
Like the rhythm, the rhymes.
But he's using a modernist theme of that lack of structure and a solid basis to write off of.
Kind of some irony here, this idea of death and chaos in a world that with no meaning, yet he's speaking within form and structure.
Yeah.
One of the typical things in modern poetry and modern literature is this rejection of form. Whereas here, it's this idea of we're living in a world of chaos and with no meaning, so why should we be writing with form? We should be writing with chaos.
Many of his fellow poets were completely rejecting that style entirely because they felt that the world was in such chaos that they couldn't write in that strict structured form.
Dylan Thomas probably agreed with them, he chose to use form to communicate. And he chose to, maybe a little bit of irony there in that he's talking about this.
These modernistic themes,
right,
well.
Yet using romantic forms and rhythms, kind of an interesting thing. Well, shall we play our game? We're gonna do talk about poetic voice for a little bit. And we're gonna do a little quiz show. Name that poetic voice. And before we start, let's go ahead and play a musical clip. And here's the whole concept. The idea is you can hear a voice of a person and know, boom, that's who that is. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a musical clip and see if you can identify who the artist is based on this clip. All right, so here's clip number one. You know that one, Jacob?
Yeah, that one's easy, Mr. Craig. That one was Billy Corgan singing Disarm by the Smashing Pumpkins.
How do you know that?
Well, it's simple. I mean, he's got a real distinctive voice. He's got that high, nasally, high-pitched kind of singing.
Easy to identify. You can tell. Boom. I know. I can hear it. That's Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins. All right, you ready? Track number two, clip number two.
All right.
How are you guys at home doing? Are you one for one? All right, keep score.
I hope so. I mean, these are real distinctive.
All right, so here's our second distinctive poetic voice. Ooh, that one's a little bit tougher. Do you know who that one is, Jacob?
Why, yes, Mr. Craig. That was actually Modest Yahoo. He's a Hasidic Jew from New York.
Right.
And that one's real distinctive because they have that kind of reggae, Caribbean-type music.
Jamaican vibe.
And he does that rhyme real well, but you can tell he's got that underlying Jewish tone to his voice that you can really...
Well, and the themes there, too, are very, very much about Judaism.
Right.
And
he blends those real well.
Yeah.
So it's
it's a unique, too, so you can identify. I mean, there's not many Hasidic Jews out there doing reggae.
No,
so that's a very unique, and you can tell right off the bat, that is Modest Yahoo. Not many guys doing that, and you can identify him. So shall we move? Now, let's pick it up a notch. How are you guys at home doing? We've given you two pop culture music questions here. So now... we're going to do a little bit more of a literary voice because you can do the same thing with musicians. I mean, if I played you a clip of Elvis, you would probably be able to recognize his voice. Now, let's give a little clip of a literary person and see if you can identify it. And I'll start with one. Or actually, why don't you do yours? Do you have yours?
I do.
That you're going to give? All right, go for it.
I'll go ahead and read mine off.
All right.
Let me not the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with remover to remove.
Ooh, that I can just smell the Shakespeare coming. Of course, one of Shakespeare's sonnets. You can tell the language that he uses, the rhyme scheme, the form. When you read that, you know that is a Shakespearean sonnet.
Of course,
very identifiable. All right, well, let me give you, this one's even a little bit tougher. Ah, summer grasses, all that remains of the warrior's dreams. That's a tough one. If I were to give you a hint and tell you that's a haiku, would that help you at all?
Yeah. Is that Basho, maybe?
Basho, one of the famous haiku poets, translated by R.H. Blythe, but Basho has a very distinct voice in that you can identify. He's very well known for his forms, his specific forms of the haiku. And so there you have it. There's our little game show quiz.
It's blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Now the question is, let's look at Dylan Thomas. What is his poetic voice? And we learned by Loy Zupan in our, and again, you can go and find this where we were looking in our, in the show notes. I'll have a link to this track star, and it's a tract of a couple different resources that we were referring to and referencing. And Loy Zupan has a great article on there that we talked about identifying your poetic voice. How do you find your voice? And she has 5 criterion that she says, this is how you can identify voice. What are those 5 criterion she talks about?
Well, the first is grammar and syntax. The second is form. The third is music. Fourth is your subject matter. And the fifth is just that magic that comes when you're speaking.
Okay, so by looking at those 5 areas, you can kind of, according to Lori Zupan, she kind of narrows it down to those. You can kind of identify a signature and what is unique to you. And we talk about different poets having different things that identify them, be it the type of grammar they use, the structure of their sentences, the forms that they use. Like Basho, the haiku is very, very
Shakespeare sonnets as
right.
well.
Form there. And then the subject matter, you know, knowing what kinds of things they're talking about. You know, Shakespeare's sonnets about love lost are very, very typical of his. Petrarch as well, those romantics. Well, let's look at Dylan Thomas. Which of those characteristics really kind of define Dylan Thomas's poetic voice?
Well, he really has a distinctive form, kind of like Shakespeare and Basho. He likes to mainly use this free verse, but he occasionally likes to throw in the rhyme and rhythm schemes, like on his poems that relate to death, like his "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night."
So this idea even of using form to communicate the theme, this idea of connecting it, and his willingness to change his form. A lot of poets, it's almost like the antithesis of nailing down a voice. You know, a lot of poets stay with a specific form, whereas, you know, Dylan Thomas kind of almost by characteristic, he adapts and he moves and changes. That's kind of certainly an interesting point. What's another identifying characteristic of Dylan Thomas's voice?
Well, his subject matter is very, very intriguing, because he talks, like, mostly his are about his relationships that he had with people, but then he talks about how death, which is not something most people would really want to, you know, think about writing a poem about, that he really puts it into perspective, and you can see his true feelings
common
about how
there.
He feels about death, of, like, right. people he loved, and just death in general.
Excellent. Well, there you go. That's kind of our thoughts on Dylan Thomas, on who he is. We talked a little bit about the context of where he's writing from, how the form matches there, and how form adapts and changes within modernism and kind of beyond. And we talked about voice, and I think probably a fitting way to close out here is, let's hear from the man himself. We have an actual recording of Dylan Thomas reading his own poetry. So we will leave this Dylan Thomas extravaganza podcast by letting Dylan Thomas read "Do Not Go Gentle," and we will close out. I am Mr. Craik.
I'm Jacob Osborne.
Thanks for listening to the Brit Lit podcast. Go to britlit.podomatic.com. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about this extended format. I guess this is it for the summer, huh, Jacob?
Yeah, we might have to maybe get together and throw in some good ones.
Take a little bit of a break, but sure enough, in the fall, we'll certainly be back, and we will be doing some more experiments. May dive into Beowulf a little bit, maybe do some other early heroic literature epics. But leave us a comment. Let us know what you want to hear. What do you want us to cover? And we will do our best as we come back in the fall. So have a great summer and enjoy a little bit of Dylan Thomas.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
You've been listening to the Brit Lit Podcast, a production of Mr. Craig's second period class from Grapevine, Texas, where British literature is made fun. Make sure to visit the website at www.britlit.podomatic.com and keep tuning in for more dramatic readings and dialogues.
There you have it. There's our little game show quiz. Cue the game show music.
Do.
I think we'll probably maybe we'll put in a Bob Dylan clip, like the answer. That's
sounds
it.
Good to me.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer, get it? The game show, the answer.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we'll go back in and dub that in. So there's our game show.
The Poetic Voice Game Show, quiz show.